the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, October the 17th. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Wow, it has been a busy few weeks for sure. And as I've been talking about the last few weeks, my family and I are headed off to San Diego on Saturday for a family vacation. It's going to be our first time traveling with two kids, and I hate to say it, but I am sure that is going to bring on some unconscious rage. Not sure if you can hear the airplane flying over the house right now, but the window is open, so you may hear that. Today, I have a recovery story, and this actually is my absolute favorite recovery story. It's from Jeremy Whitaker, and I'm going to link we start to talk about this in the intro, but I'm going to link his story in the show notes. You can look at this like when you click details in iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening, there'll be a link to it, and I would actually suggest to stop before the interview and go and read that. It's in depth. It's a heck of a read, but it's certainly worth it to give you some context of Jeremy's story. Really pretty amazing. Loves to golf and has, you know, had tremendous back pain. It was even instances of him going through like a car windshield when he was a lot younger. But it was, you know, terrible back pain, and he loved to golf, and basically, it kind of sounds, I think, through the episode that I'm ragging on chiropractors, and that is not my intent. However, if you are a chiropractor and you do listen to this, please send me a DM. Just in my experience and the experiences of a lot of people that I've talked to over the last year and a half, I just don't hear that many great stories. But there is an interesting recovery video from a chiropractor for Steve Ozanich's book. He also worked with Dr. Margaret Chan to overcome his TMS, and he's fully healed and pain-free now. So it was really cool to see like a physical practitioner. Reminded me of when I interviewed Caitlin Michaels, who's in a totally physical realm and yet was able to eradicate her symptoms. Ali Dameron exactly the same way. And you're going to hear from Ali Dameron in just a few weeks. So I thought maybe what I would do, just a little storytelling before we jump into Jeremy. So it's interesting. You know, the last 2 weeks, Nicole Sachs has been on the show, and we've done a lot of Q&A stuff, which has been accepted so well. In fact, I think now it's like 1,200 people have listened just over the last 2 weeks to these Q&A sessions with her. They just love what Nicole has to offer. I shot Nicole a text message just yesterday and told her that my stomach had been giving me fits. And there's a part in her book where she talks about the preparation for journal speak. And part of it is making lists in three columns. There's a childhood column, like stuff that would have happened to you in childhood. And then there's the daily life column. And then there's the personality traits column. And I started to make a list because I knew I had to do some type of journaling because my stomach was really acting up over the weekend. And I had asked her, like, how long, you know, how late or how old are you once the childhood section basically wears off? And her response was interesting. She actually said that basically anything that is before daily life now, she would even put in that column. So she talked about like the early days of being a mother, that would go into the childhood column, which really opened it up for me, because when I think about like my early childhood, you know, before I was 5 or 7 or 8 or whatever, was really pretty damn good. You know, it's not like we had a ton of money or anything, but overall, I got a really, really happy childhood. Some of the stuff going on later, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 years old, 16 years old, some of that stuff sucked a little bit, sucked a lot. And at some times I remember being in tears, being, you know, called fat and stuff like that, and being made fun of for my weight constantly and my clothes, and, you know, kids are just mean. So, you know, started making some lists and stuff like that. And my stomach is drastically, you know, better than it felt, probably 80 or 90% better than how it felt. And I am still off of all prescription medication for asthma and allergies. I've been off it now for over 2 months, which is really pretty awesome. And probably 3 of the last 4 months I've been off of it. So, you know, really pretty cool. All this mind-body stuff for sure. So what I would say, and maybe a big journaling tip for people that are maybe struggling in some of the elements of like journaling and being able to really excavate this stuff. My thought, and if you go back a few episodes where I talked about you need to go darker, not only do you need to go darker in your thoughts, but I feel like you need to get more petty too. Because again, like what's happening is the voice inside of you when you have this chronic pain or chronic anything, there's a little voice inside of you of a screaming kid basically that just wants to be heard. And when I sit down and I write for 20 minutes, And I've started to do it more on a computer because I can get a lot of more of my thoughts out. The computer age, right? Us millennials, just handwriting has just takes so long. And I feel like the longer that I've worked with computers, the worse my handwriting has gotten too. So there is that. But I would advise to certainly write very, very petty things that you quote unquote shouldn't get mad about or be angry about. Those are probably things that are big components of internal rage, and the conversation again cannot be this aggravates me or this stresses me out or that's all so surface level stuff like this makes me really angry, this upsets me, I want to hurt this person. There's actually like a really interesting part of Dr. Schubiner's Unlearn Your Pain book, and I was going back and referencing something in there because I remember he was talking about I think it's short-term psychodynamic therapy or something psychodynamic therapy, short-term intensive psychodynamic therapy, something like that. And he does a couple of sections in there where he's giving an example of working with a client. And there was one where I think that I feel like it was this boy's mom had either passed away or his parents got divorced or something like that. And he was talking about his how much he didn't like his dad and how much him and his dad didn't get along. And Dr. Schubiner's working through this exercise with him and asking him to elaborate on that. And by the time they get to the end of the session, the boy or the man now is telling his dad as if his dad was there how much he hates him. He's punching him, he's kicking him, he's telling him how much he hates everything about him and it makes him so angry and all this stuff. And by the end of the session, the guy's pain level's drastically less and eventually ends up going away and the guy's pain free. There's another exercise in there where a dad is talking about upsetting times with his daughter, which I thought was really interesting because I'm a father with two little girls. But one of his daughters is basically just a train wreck of a teenager. And at the time they were writing this, or that he was going through the exercise, his daughter, I think, is in her 20s and is not as problematic, but the guy is still very much stuck and fixated in this time when she was a teenager. So he really is going off. I hate you. You ruined our family, all this stuff. Which I think are things that people need to just come to terms with, is allowing yourself to get really, really, really angry. Again, it's not stressed and aggravated and annoyed. It's angry, it's enraged, and it's furious. Like, you need to feel the fury. That's what it's about. All right, so we're going to talk to Jeremy Whitaker now. Incredibly jealous of his lifestyle. He spends his time, the winters, it sounds like, living up in Colorado in a cabin, and he also spends a ton of time traveling as an independent consultant in aerospace, which is just awesome. So hope you enjoy this interview with Jeremy Whitaker. Again, the number one way that you can support this show is by leaving a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Really, really helps the show out. You can like us on Facebook as well. Again, this is Eddie Lindenstein. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast, and here is Jeremy Whitaker. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I am here today with the author of my all-time, I've read a lot of recovery stories in my time looking into this stuff, my all-time favorite one from Jeremy Whitaker. Jeremy's on the line with me. Jeremy, are you there?
Yes, I am here, Eddie.
So I'm going to link, probably what I'm going to request actually, before anybody even listens to the rest of this episode, pause it and, go to, there's going to be some show notes in the bio or of the description of this show. And there's going to be a link to Jeremy's story. It's long. It's probably, I don't know, it might take you 10 or 11 minutes to read, but, I feel like it's vital for the story because I don't want to rehash everything that's in here, but, it'll certainly give you all of the important parts. So Jeremy is currently in Colorado, right?
That is correct. We are currently at our mountain cabin in Colorado where we spend most summers.
Awesome. So Jeremy is in avionics. He's an independent consultant. He creates avionics systems for aircrafts, mostly to retrofit. And I feel like, A, I'm talking to a really, really smart guy. And then, two, a guy who's sort of been through the ringer with the medical establishment. So I guess, like, I kind of always like almost starting with, you know, how long ago did your pain start? What was your issues? What kind of diagnosis did you get?
Okay. So sure. Yeah. I probably started having low back pain around 2006, something like that. It wasn't necessarily too debilitating. I play a lot of golf. I'm an avid golfer, and I would start having these backaches the day after I'd play golf, and they progressively got worse. Occasionally, I would have things like, you know, full-on back spasms to where, you know, you'd wake up in the morning after playing a lot of golf or something, and I was completely locked up, couldn't get out of bed. I was fairly hesitant to see a doctor about this type of thing, just because, you know, I have a lot of family members that have similar problems, and, you know, they all kind of went the traditional medical route, and I just didn't see a lot of success with what they did as far as surgeries, things like that. So I kind of just used the grin and bear it method for years. Just kind of would fight through the pain, tried not to talk about it, tried to ignore it. I started having some other issues, such as chronic foot pain and chronic shoulder pain and chronic neck pain. And those just sort of, they kind of came on gradually. I don't even know exactly when they started, but just all of a sudden I'm sitting there going, I'm kind of in a lot of pain all the time. And it just wasn't fun. I wasn't that old. And I just wasn't quite ready to be where I was. So I was at a golf expo, and I kind of was introduced to a chiropractor there who, you know, talked to me about this and was very down to earth and said, yeah, I agree. You don't want surgery, but we can develop an exercise program, come in for some treatment, et cetera. And so, you know, it was seemed totally legit, totally up the alley of what I wanted. And little did I know, that was really probably when my condition started to get its worse. I was going through the treatments, doing the programs, and although I was feeling better the day after treatment, progressively I was just getting worse and worse. So eventually, long before I discovered mind-body medicine, anything like that, I sort of kicked my chiropractor to the curb on my own. I was like, this isn't working. I mean, I'm not an idiot here, or a glutton for punishment. This just isn't working. So, and I don't have any ill intent for my chiropractor. I don't think he had any ill intentions towards me or anything like that. It just didn't work, and I stopped doing it. So I kind of went back to what I was doing before, which was just sort of the grin and bear it, fight through your pain, and, you know, just was not getting any better. I was getting worse. And then I discovered Sarno, and that was about in 2013. I think I first read Healing Back Pain, The Mind-Body Connection. And I would say within 3 months, I was cured.
That's
completely.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And we're going to get, there's like a, what, as I've read the story, because I've probably read it, I don't know, 15 times, 20 times. And I seem to always learn something different as I'm reading it, because some of the things I'll reference back to, and I'll, like things that I'm talking about on the podcast, like, oh yeah, like what did Jeremy say about this? What did Jeremy say about that? And like, does it align with kind of what I'm thinking? And then I get questions about meditation. Do I think that it's helpful, or do I think that journaling is necessary, or do I think somebody changing their life is necessary? And a lot of times, like I reference back to a lot of the things that you wrote because I'm so in agreement with so much of it. I'm wondering about the, when I interviewed Steve Ozanich, we talked about this whole concept that not just chiropractors, I mean, physical therapists have it and doctors talk about it and stuff, that like for back pain, you need to work on your core. It means your stomach muscles are weak. And this was a recurring theme in some of the stuff that you would talk about. So I guess, like, you know, thinking all these years back, like, you know, you were told that you had a weak core and here's an exercise program and here's a big blow up ball and all this kind of stuff. Like, I mean, to me, when I think about that kind of stuff, I mean, I got told that I needed to work my core, and I was like deadlifting and squatting like 300 and 400 pounds, but how is it possible that just walking around or sitting there or whatever could cause such excruciating pain? Now playing armchair quarterback all these years later, I mean, have you thought further about this weak core idea and maybe why so many practitioners are fixated on that?
Boy, why they are, I don't know. I've thought more about it, and I can tell you it's a lot of baloney. I think what they see is people that are active, people that don't go ahead and recline, you know, go completely to bed rest when they are diagnosed with this, do better than people that don't. So prescribing an exercise routine or something like that probably does show some results. But like Sarno discovered, it just sort of fuels this deception. And if you're actually looking for a 100% cure, you're not going to get there that way by trying to strengthen your core. You just aren't. I mean, that's just a misconception. And I think doctors, I think I heard that on your podcast today, you know, they'll talk about 10 to 15% as like a huge success, you know, an improvement of 10 to 15%. And that's just, I'm telling people, that's not the cure that I have.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't take 10 to 15% odds or improvement in really anything, right? If something was that bad, like say that your faucet's leaking, like all over the ground. I mean, if a plumber were to come in and say, I've got this thing that we can do and it'll cause 10% less leakage, I'd be like, go to hell. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear about any of that. I think it's so fascinating, like all the different things. And okay, so you talked about a lot of these different diagnoses, because you had gotten like x-rays and you like talked about going through like a windshield of a car and all this kind of stuff. I mean, what are maybe some of the different, like, I guess maybe the scariest diagnosis, I guess, that maybe you've gotten throughout time before you found the mind body medicine stuff? Like, what's maybe one that kind of stopped you in your tracks and you thought, oh, this might actually be really bad?
Just the low back and neck stuff. I mean, I can remember very specifically going in my first day with the doctor talking to me about things like, you know, yeah, I know you're here because you want to play golf, but you need to think about your ability to be able to walk long term. And that kind of hit me. You know, I'm sitting there in my 30s and this guy's telling me that I have a back condition that might affect my long-term ability to be able to walk. And it wasn't such a stretch for me because I'd seen the same thing with my grandfather. He had gone through, you know, back problems and surgeries, and, you know, later on in his life, he wasn't able to walk. He was, you know, let alone play golf. So yeah, I mean, that's frightening.
What about the claim? So I have a couple of words in the English language that bother me more than many. One of them is mindset. It just drives me nuts when people say it because I just feel like I don't really even know what that means, and I don't know if anybody that says it know what it means. It's like when a lot of people that have like a communication background use the word algorithm. I know I don't know what it means. You know what I mean? But a lot of people just use it all the time.
Sure.
Somebody had talked about inflammation. Like one of the things to you, Jeremy, you need to stop playing golf for the rest of the season so you can focus on treatments and getting rid of the inflammation that's causing this pain and stiffness. Inflammation is such a buzzword. Like, I feel like every chiropractor I've ever met has used that word and use it ad nauseum. Like, I mean, tell me about this alleged inflammation. Like, did you have big, stiff, like swelling muscles? Like, what led him to believe that there was inflammation?
So that'd be a good question, because I could certainly never see any inflammation in my lower back, but I was told that there was inflammation there that caused it. But that's just another thing that didn't necessarily add up. I mean, I've sprained my ankle or knee before, and I've watched it swell up, and then you apply ice and it goes down. So, I mean, I think that was another thing that just kind of helped me to understand that maybe this guy doesn't know everything, because, you know, I'm not quite getting how I'm having inflammation this day, but not this day, and what's causing it, and pinched nerves. It's kind of like, I think sometimes the story is almost made impossible to understand.
And maybe even intentionally.
Sure. Well, intentionally / unintentionally, subconsciously.
Right. Well, I mean, I always feel like it's, one of the other like recurring themes that I've heard a lot of chiropractors in my life talk about is this concept of like when I say that here's a good example. My back hurts, my mid back hurts, or my upper back hurts, and he's looking at my feet and telling me I need to go buy orthotics. And then once the feet are fixed, it'll cause less less attention on the back, and then we can start working on the core and then some of the instability in the hip flexors and all this. Like, just thinking that, okay, like, I get what you're saying is that the body is all connected, but the problem that I have with this is like, if there's any sort of a kink in that armor, like, then there's a problem. There was one chiropractor that I worked with who I worked with him for 8 weeks. I went and saw him for, you know, twice a week, every week for 8 weeks. And I was like, literally I would go to the private handicap bathroom at the office that I was working at the time and like do some of these core exercises, because the only place that I could get some privacy, I'd be like on the ground of this bathroom floor. And I remember at the end of 8 weeks when he's like, what's your improvement? And I said, I haven't improved at all. I might even be worse. And he said, well, you're not doing the exercises that I'm prescribing to you. And I just thought, like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm doing all of this stuff, and how can you pin it on me after all this time?
That can be very frustrating. I think, you know, when you're doing what you're told, and then you're questioned that you're maybe not doing what you're told, and you're absolutely are.
Right. You know, one thing that I asked Jeanette Barber when she was on about a month and a half ago is that I asked her, like, what about, describe your pain, because people describe it in all sorts of different ways. They might say pinching or like lightning bolts or stiffness, or like there could be a variety of ways. Kind of depends on the person. So, I mean, describe that back and neck pain. I mean, what did it feel like to you?
So, I guess there's a couple different things I would talk about with that pain. I think in general, I was in some amount, dull amount of pain all the time. Like there was never a time where there wasn't some soreness or stiffness in my neck, my foot, my lower back. That was sort of just persistent all the time, nagging. And that was what I just believed was part of being older and part of arthritis and, you know, part of being active and playing golf and stuff you have to live with. And then there was another thing, which would be these back spasms. And those, it's really hard to explain to someone that hasn't had them before or doesn't know what you're talking about. I would assume that's a lot like trying to describe what a migraine is like.
Right.
But it's extremely debilitating. I mean, you wake up and as soon as you try to take a step, it's the most debilitating pain that you can imagine. I mean, I have broken my leg, I've broken my arm, I've done different things, and this is more painful than those things. And yet, you know, it kind of comes and goes, and it's very hard to explain to your spouse or anyone else, like, how and why that what you're experiencing is as painful and debilitating it is, as it is, but it just is. So I guess if that is an explanation of what that pain's like, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that know exactly what I'm talking about. But
yeah, I mean, I certainly do. I had like this very specific spot, like mid back, typically like on there. When Sarno did the 2020 episode, he had described, and I brought this up with Dr. Schechter, and he didn't know what I was talking about in the episode specifically, but Sarno had said that he sees these patients and they've got these big things on both sides of the back and they're like paralyzed and all that kind of stuff. And I think what he was talking about was like the spinal erectors on the sides of the spine.
Sure.
Is that those are big. And I assume because they're super stiff, and that was my case, like that they were very, very big, but also like my trapezius and my neck would feel crummy, which I know that you dealt with that. I want to also mention, because your language is so definitive. When I read what you've written or when I see you interact with people on social media, like it's just very like, it's like, this is the way. Like you need to, there was a quote, somebody was asking about sciatica and you actually chimed in and you said, your cure will happen the second your inner and outer dialogue changes from I believe it could be to I know it is. I guess talk about that. Like how did you arrive at this 100% belief despite all the things that a medical practitioner was telling you? You know, when did that light switch for you, and like ultimately what made it switch?
So I guess it would be hard to pinpoint the exact thing, but all I could do is give credit to Sarno and his books. I mean, that's the light that switched for me. I mean, I was every page I read, just my knowledge grew. I mean, I believed everything he said. It was made perfect sense, whereas everything I didn't have before, all the information I'd been provided before didn't always make sense. Everything he wrote seemed to make sense. So it was fairly instantaneous. I wrote in my blog about a very specific moment meditating or at the end of a meditation where I sort of came out of it. And it was just a very, very clear moment of, I'm not going to be dealing with this anymore. I'm done with it. And I think that you talk about my confidence and my belief in the way. And I think that is a big key to my success. And I think it's something that not everybody does as well or understands, but I do think an extreme amount of confidence in your own self and your own abilities is a big factor in having a great amount of success with this. And like I've said before, I'm a big golf fan, so if I can use an analogy there, you watch professional golfers give an interview about golf and they're almost annoying how cocky they are about their own ability. When I play golf, even if I step up on the first tee and hit it right down the middle, I usually apologize then and say something like, oh, you're never going to see that again. Or, you know, like I immediately go there and, you know, then I'm pretty much right. I never do hit another good drive the whole round,
right.
But you know, I suck at golf. I don't suck at this mind body medicine stuff. And I feel like I almost have to act like the Tiger Woods of mind body medicine to be successful at it.
You know, I played a whole round, maybe a month and a half ago where I didn't lose one ball. That was like the shining moment in my life. And then I went to go use that exact same Nike ball. Usually I'll play a lot of times, like I'm whenever I bring out that driver, bad things happen. So a lot of times I'll stick with usually a six, a wedge, and a putter. Sometimes I'll bring out like an eight. If everybody in the foursome is agreeing that, hey, we can lose a ball, we're just doing a practice shot, then right. I'll bring out like a big driver and I'll really like Mark McGuire it the hell out of the plate. And then it never goes straight.
Oh, yeah.
But I hear you, man. I'm right there with you. So for you, like, you didn't even finish the book by the time that sort of everything came to fruition. It was on this island in Cedar Key, Florida, I believe is where it was. And you were doing the meditation, and then your awareness. So you talk about your awareness landing squarely on that normally throbbing lower back of yours. Is it just like, I mean, to me, like what, just like the psychology side of me and what I know about like the unconscious and subconscious mind, I feel like that was the link. Like, it's almost like your consciousness is landing squarely on basically your subconscious and saying, okay, sure. Like, this shit is over. Like, we're done with it. And then it went away. Like, it seems so magic. A lot of people, like, they kind of go through this and they think of it as like a journey and that they're going to spend months and months and months or years and years healing themselves. You did it so much quicker. And I think a lot of times, like, people turn to this podcast to know, like, what's the magic potion or what's the secret sauce?
Yeah.
And I just don't know if it's that simple.
Yeah, I don't know. It is tough. I hear all the time on the Facebook groups, which I've been a part of for quite a few years now. But, you know, I'll kind of get riled up because you'll hear people say, and even sometimes the experts, they'll say things like, you're never going to be cured by reading a book. You know, you're not, you know, you just don't believe that. Some people might say that, but they're not telling you the truth. Well, maybe not many of us do, but some of us do. And I don't believe that's true. I think there's actually quite a few of us have cured ourselves that way. Most of us just aren't hanging around these groups. Most people are just out living their life.
Yep.
But I mean, I don't think anyone else can come to it for you. I think it's something you have to do yourself. And I've been somewhat frustrated over the years sharing this experience because of how difficult it is to get through to people. But you have to accept that it's not your job to tell this to people. It's their job to figure it out themselves. All you can kind of do is present the information. So how exactly, what the magic bullet in, boy, is, I wish I had that. I wish I could tell people that, because there's a lot of people very close to me that would benefit greatly from that. But it seems like a long shot.
Yeah. So what has been that reception? Usually when there's like somebody that I'm talking to that has a spouse, I like to ask, you know, how has this impacted that relationship? But I think family dynamics are really important for something like this too. Like, people in your family, you know, your close family that knew that all this stuff was going on with you for years. And, you know, I'm sure at some point that they probably at least heard about it. You know, how did they take it? How did they take that this was ultimately your cure, your way out? I guess, what's the response?
So it depends on who it is. I mean, my wife, for instance, is extremely supportive, extremely open-minded. Most of my family has been extremely supportive and open-minded with me, even if they don't buy it. So I think that's one thing to say. Yeah, I accept perfectly. That makes perfect sense. You know, I've known you for a long time. I can certainly see how stress maybe was causing your pain. It's much more difficult for anyone else to look at themselves, or for me to then say, what about you and this problem? Or what about this crowd? Is there any chance that that could be similar to mine? That's where I sort of run out of luck, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, and I think that maybe some people, when they get confused over this stuff and they think, okay, like stress, like I was asked by my company to write an article on, you know, sort of what my story was. And really, like, I was going back and forth about really trying to explain the Sarnoff theory, which is more like unconscious emotions, unconscious rage. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the idea, because a lot of people just won't. I feel like, okay, well, this is where everybody turns off the article and goes and reads something else. But like,
sure.
So I ended up equating it to stress. Like, that was really the only way, because when I think of stress, I think of like emotional stress and subconscious stress, and like all those things exist. But for you, like, as you've thought back, I mean, would you put yourself more in the camp of this was a stress illness and I'll leave it at that? My job is stressful, my bills are stressful, all that kind of stuff. Or for you, was it like really capturing a, you know, probably almost like a moment of some internal subconscious anger and rage and all that, you know, vicious stuff that Sarno talks about?
So I guess I would answer that combination and say it's a combination for sure. I think it's especially when you're first discovering this stuff and you're first seeing the connections and you're in pain on a regular basis, it's important to sort of see how stress is affecting that. I think that's one of your first things that you are able to do is go, you know what? I did have that terrible back spasm, and it did happen to come at this exact time when I was having this stressful event or this work event. And I think that's very important. But I think at some point, if you're looking to remain pain-free and not be constantly in a cycle of battling symptoms where you're, you know, I have this symptom, so therefore I have to do this to make it go away, but where you're going to go and say spend 5 years with no symptoms whatsoever, you sort of have to adopt a different mindset and you have to think a little bit deeper about that. You're never going to be able to remain stress-free in your life. You have to sort of develop more of a mindset that your pain is independent of how you're feeling. And you almost have to drop that dialogue that's constantly in your head about stress and about emotions and sort of just feel what you're feeling and release it.
Yeah, so that's an interesting concept, because one thing that I asked one of these guys in this space very early on, maybe, you know, 3 weeks after I read Sarno's book, was like, okay, when I get to that point of when I don't have pain, like, what then? Like, what sort of preventative things can I do? And are you saying that it's like it's a shift in your programming almost? Like, you have some kind of an event that maybe 10 years ago would have tripped off, you know, some kind of a perpetuating back spasm or something like that, and now it's just your reaction to it is different? Or am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, it's almost like there's no chance that a stressful event can cause a back spasm for me. There's just no way that I'm going to allow that to happen. It's just part of my core belief system. So it's not like I constantly have to fight away stress in order to keep back spasms from coming. Like, I'm already on to this subconscious mind and what it likes to do to me, so I'm not going to let it fool me anymore. And so it's not as much of an active, like, stress relief process. But again, I feel like that sort of plays into the ongoing mindfulness strategies and meditation and things like that. Kind of, it just is easier to stay in a place where you're not in a constant dialogue with yourself and thinking about symptoms and what's causing them, whether it's a golf game or an argument with your spouse or whatever. You know, you just learn to drop the dialogue.
Tell me about the meditation practice. I think a lot of people, they want to do something, right? They want to, like, meditate. If you go online and you look at, okay, what is meditation or how do you meditate, right? Like, if you go to YouTube and you type in how to meditate, there's like a few videos that have over a million hits. And so a lot of people are trying to best understand that. For you, I guess, how do you explain what it is? What are people focusing on? What should they be thinking about? How long should they be doing it? Like, those kind of things.
Well, those are all fairly individual type of questions. I can tell you what I do and how I do it. But like you say, there are a number of different meditation processes and techniques and everything else. What I do and have practiced for probably 15 years now is just a sort of a daily breathing mindfulness practice. I mean, I literally sit on a cushion and think about my breathing in and out. And that's all I think about. When thoughts come into my head that aren't about my breath and breathing, I recognize that thought, and then I return to that breath. In the process of doing that, I do it 15 minutes every morning, and then usually 15 minutes later on in the day. The second practice isn't always consistent, but every morning that's the first thing I do when I wake up. And it's changed my life in so many ways in the last 15 years. The mind-body medicine is just part of it. It definitely plays into that. But, you know, I hear a lot of things, you know, you'll hear people all the time that say, yeah, I tried meditation, it didn't work for me. And that's a head scratcher for me. I'll be like, what do you mean you tried it for like 10 years and it didn't work? Or you tried it for 10 minutes and it didn't work?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very different, it's sort of like running or weightlifting or anything else. It's not an instant thing. And you'll even hear doctors say, yes, meditation can be good for stress relief. And I don't really look at it as a stress relief technique. I look at it as a mind-changing technique. It's something that literally changes my mind and how I think and how my mind works and how my relationship with my subconscious, all of that is why I meditate, not for stress relief.
Yeah, and I do actually think that that's a very important distinction, because I do think that a lot of people treat it that way. And early on, like when I, you know, maybe a week after I read Sarna's book for the first time, my mom had given me Buddha's Brain, the book, which is a good book, but there's a lot of the thought that she had, I think, was just more about, okay, meditation as a stress relief, and then you return to your normally stressful life, like once that 10 minutes or whatever is over. But you're treating it like something completely different than a way that I mean, I haven't heard somebody explain it in the way that you're explaining it. So I think that people should maybe even rewind 2 minutes and listen to that part once again. On there. So you had also said that it took a little bit of time, like before you could even really explain it to your wife or explain it to anybody else. Did that also mean that you, like, was the pain 100% gone in that, like, that crystal ball moment? Or was it like this was a drastic reduction, you knew this was the way, and then it petered off, you know, within a couple of weeks or a few days or whatever?
I definitely had some relapses, I would say, in the first year, in that 2013 type of time frame, but it was drastic. I mean, the changes were drastic and instantaneous, especially with regards to that low back pain and that neck spasm stuff that, you know, where I would just be like, I slept on my neck wrong again, and I'd walk around with that tilted neck all day. Like, those types of things were happening to me regularly, and they went away instantly. It did take longer to make some of this more permanent. I think my chronic shoulder problem was something that took my head a lot longer to grasp, because I had such a, you know, a ski injury that was so obvious, and, you know, went through all of the, you know, process of that, and it just became this chronic problem, and I just could not believe that could possibly be emotionally based. That was so definitely a physical problem that it took me longer to grasp that it was emotional. And then when it did, that went away as well. But I realized my experience is not like a lot of people's. My experience was pretty rapid.
So you've had your moments since then. You talked about, like, you know, you go for a big drive with a golf club, not a car. And you hear a pop in your back, right? And a lot of people, Sarna always said in his books, like, that people think of a pop as, like, this is when pain's going to start. I've actually always thought the opposite. Like, when I, you know, if I twist or something and I hear a pop, I feel relief. So I don't, like, I know what he means, but,
yeah.
So, like, when that happens and you get, like, a sudden twinge or whatever, I guess, like, how fast is it now at this point, because you have so much repetition, how fast is it for you to say, oh, like, I know what's going on, no big deal?
For a lot of those types of things, it's real fast. I mean, for the low back, I feel like I know all of those traps. I know, like, what it's, you know, what it feels like. But there's always, your subconscious mind is always going to try to fill that void with something else. And I'll give you an example here for me of how that has worked. But I recently had a wrist injury. And so this will kind of tell you what a kind of country folk I am here. But anyway, I was walking, we had this fox that was dead and in the middle of our road out here in the mountains. And, you know, we called the county and they're like, well, we won't come pick up anything smaller than a deer. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go out there and get rid of this fox. So I've got, like, a stick and I'm trying to flick this dead fox off of the road and into the woods. But anyway, I injured my wrist in the process of doing that. And it was pretty obvious. I kind of sprained it and it hurt. I iced it, and for the next few days, I tried to take it easy. But then, you know, like 3 weeks later, I'm sitting there working with my mouse and, you know, at the computer, and this thing's kind of throbbing. And I'm like, wait a minute here. This isn't making sense. This should have healed by now. And then I sort of start making those connections, and I immediately get rid of my ice bag, take my wrist brace off, and within days it's gone. So, I mean, it's the TMS is still always out there and it's still trying to trick you, but you just kind of have to stay a step ahead of it.
I don't know if I could, if there was a dead fox outside, my wife and I, we have this rule in our house. Our cat always brings in, we're in the suburbs, we're 20 miles outside of Seattle. But our cat brings in, she'll bring it most of the time, it's a dead animal. She'll bring in a mouse, or she'll bring in a bird, or like, I'm waiting for the day where she like, you know, drags like a raccoon or something in the house, but she's an animal, I guess. But she'll bring it. My wife and I have this rule. If she brings in something dead, I will clean it up. If it's something alive, I just can't do it. I can't chase a live mouse. Like there's something inside of me that just says, this is gross and I just can't do it. And they freak me out. And what if he runs over my foot and bites me in the toe and all this kind of stuff? So kudos to you, man, for cleaning up roadkill that big.
Yeah, well, when you live up in the mountains where we live, you kind of experience some wildlife. Let's leave it at that. And I heard your story of going camping the other day.
That it was amazing. So let's back up before I even get into that. So tell me about this. You know, you sold your house and you guys bought this 3/4-ton pickup, and then you essentially just started traveling the country and you know, living in a different town all the time. But now you're talking about living up in the mountains in a cabin. So tell me about what's the lifestyle like right now?
So we were pretty typical. We don't have kids. My wife and I are in our 40s and never had kids. Both have pretty successful careers, and we had a house in the city of Denver, and we had this little mountain cabin up in the mountains that we'd kind of use as a weekend place. And you know, life was good, except for we were both kind of like, you know, is this all there is to it? Are we really just working for a paycheck and, you know, these car payments and blah, blah, blah. So we did the whole like midlife crisis type thing. So we sold our house, bought a travel trailer, kind of quit our, you know, more established jobs and started doing more of this consulting thing. And we just started traveling full time in our RV. We took off, and first thing we did is head from Denver to the East Coast. And the first year we did like the East Coast and Florida and the Gulf Coast. And then the second year we did like the West Coast, and the third year we did Maine, and basically just crisscrossed the country, you know, while still working, but, you know, living in a travel trailer. Now we will come back a lot of times in the summer to our little cabin that's up in the mountains outside of Colorado, but basically we live as nomads.
That
most
is just,
of the year.
Yeah, that is awesome. So how, like, okay, so you do the avionics thing, and your wife, so she's doing some consulting now too. What kind of a field is she in?
She's in education. She was a teacher and principal for years and now does educational consulting.
So I, like, as a kid, both my parents are teachers, and so they always had the summers off. And then, you know, my whole childhood, I mean, all the way up until I was 16 and had a job and couldn't just take, you know, 2 months off or 3 months off from my job or whatever, was spent like on the road, like doing, you know, we had a 77 Plymouth Volare when I was a little kid, no air conditioning. We would drive from Chico, California to like, you know, Philadelphia sometimes, like all the way around the country and just, you know, see the sights and sounds. And like, then, you know, I was like, I wasn't dreading it, but I was just kind of like, oh, we're doing this again. I just want to stay home and watch TV and play video games or whatever.
Right.
But now all these years back, I look back and I'm like, thank God, like how awesome it was to just have the opportunity to live like a nomad for 2 or 3 months, even as a little kid. So I think that's awesome. So yeah, so we went tent camping to Moses Lake. Now, when you did the West Coast, did you get a chance to come up to like see the PNW at all?
No, we didn't quite make it there.
So it's so Moses Lake is like 3 to 4 hours east of Seattle, and so we went out there, and like everybody around us had RVs. Like I think there was probably 2 or 3 tents, something like that, that were right on the lake with us. So we tent camped, and like tent camping with me and my wife and our 4-year-old and our 7-month-old, like it seemed like, okay, this could be kind of a big undertaking. However, like I had a damn blast. Like I could do that all the time. And I was very averse to camping for the first 10 years my wife and I were together. And then it was interesting because when all this chronic pain stuff started and I read Sarno's book, part of my thought over those first couple of months was like, gosh, I really need to stop and smell the roses of life a little bit more, because I'm just living for a paycheck. I'm just racing to work and selling the deals that I need to sell and coming home and stressing out about, you know, sales that I'm going to do or deals or whatever. Like, I would love to just go spend 3 days in the woods where I have very, very limited, if any, cell reception and no work email. Like, I love that.
Yeah, it's been a great thing. I think we started in 2013 and said, well, let's travel around and decide where we want to buy a house next or where we want to settle down. And we just decided that we prefer the traveling to settling down. It was actually more fun. So, you know, I don't know how long we'll keep doing it. You know, only time will tell. We're very much kind of just live it day by day and take it as it goes. But I agree with what you're saying, just slowing down and, you know, having an opportunity to be in nature and live in the present moment is everything for us.
Yeah. 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 There's something just came to me that I should have asked you 10 minutes ago, but you were talking, and I only bring this up because I'm a dog guy, you're a dog guy, but you had said spending hours and hours walking desperate dogs crammed in a packed city animal shelter was likely causing my plantar fasciitis foot pain, but just not in the way I thought. Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Well, I think that, you know, it's just one of those types of things where I had, you know, I was working at this shelter, and anybody that's worked or volunteered at a busy county shelter can tell you it's a stressful thing. The dogs, if you're a dog person, you probably don't understand quite the condition they're living in. But anyway, my big thing is, like, these dogs weren't being walked. So I basically took it on my shoulder to try to, like, walk as many dogs as I could in a week, but, you know, still working full time and doing all this and walking my own dogs. And pretty soon I had developed this plantar fasciitis foot pain, and, you know, I'm like limping out there walking these dogs. And, you know, looking back in hindsight, I think it was the emotions and the stress of working in that environment and with these pitiful dogs that was causing this chronic pain every bit as much as the act of walking on stretched tendons or whatever the hell plantar fasciitis is supposed to be.
who knows
Yeah, right.
That was when Jeanette Barber went and saw, so like tendonitis was the overwhelming you know, it's like the overwhelming condition people would say that she had, and then one of the last doctors said plantar fasciitis. And I thought about, like, I'm a big football guy, and I remember, like, that was kind of like the talk, like, if a quarterback got plantar fasciitis, that could very well be the end of it. And I now, like, speaking of athletes, when I read your story, I thought of Tiger Woods and all the back issues and the back surgeries, and I think of Andrew Luck for the Colts and all of his shoulder mm-hmm. issues. Like, you know, it's like whenever I've asked the medical doctors that I've had on this show the same question, and they can't answer because it's a doctor talking about somebody else's patient. But I can ask you because you're not a medical doctor.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
So you know about golf. You know about Tiger Woods' issues. What's going on? I guess if you had to armchair diagnose, what do you think's going on?
I think Tiger has TMS. That's what I think. I understand. There's no doubt that the kind of torque that a guy like Tiger is generating on his back is nothing like the kind of torque that I'm generating on mine. So probably if he were listening to me, a guy that has 100 mile an hour swing speed tops, he would probably be like, you have no idea what I'm dealing with as a professional golfer. And that's probably true. And, you know, with his spinal fusions, but you listen to his interviews and it's just as clear a case of TMS as you can possibly come to. I mean, he's very much, he believes his surgeon as much as anything, and he really has a strong belief in his most recent surgery. And as long as that belief holds up, his game will probably hold up. But my guess is there's limits to this. You talk about, even now he talks about he has to take these full body ice baths after every round, and he's not out of pain. He's just not. He's clearly not. And I think that, well, only time will see. I wish him the best. I've admired Tiger my entire life. He's basically my age, and he's an incredible athlete to watch. But he needs to start dealing with the roots of his problems instead of just the leaves. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about I know that he had, I think he had knee surgery for something like in 2007. But when I look at
knee surgeries, yep.
Yeah, when I look at, like, maybe when at least it seems like when ESPN was talking a lot about these back problems, that it seemed like it wasn't too long after all those issues at the end of 2009 were happening with his marriage and his life. And I think just the profession in general can be very, very stressful. Like when I think about Andrew Luck for the Colts, who could, and only because him and I had the same shoulder surgery, so I feel like I can empathize a little bit with him. But these recurring issues of shoulder surgeries, I think, okay, well, let's think back. Like, you were number one overall pick in the draft. You aren't performing as well as probably the expectation was of you. You're replacing Peyton Manning, who's probably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and it's Peyton Manning City, basically. And you're not performing as well as you could. Like, could those things be playing into your pain? And that's kind of how I see it with him, just as you see it with Tiger.
Oh yeah, you can see correlations, but you can see that every day. Once you sort of have the veil lifted on all this stuff, it doesn't matter if you're watching TV, you're talking to your neighbor, all the connections are so obvious to us, even though to the people that are having them and the connection seems obvious, it's just not to them.
I know it. I recently got reconnected with my best friend from when I was a teen, and we kind of got disconnected once I turned 18 and we kind of went our separate ways, you know, as people do. But I recently got his number and I started talking to him again. And, you know, it's good to catch up and stuff, but just learning that he said he fell off a treadmill, you know, 2 years ago or something. And, His back started to hurt, and he went and got it looked at, and they said, you know, you've got this problem and this problem and this problem, and they talked him into having two back surgeries like right away. And he says he's worse off since then. He got addicted to opioids, and now I think he's taken some Suboxone or something like that to try and sort of ease some of the pain issues and stuff. And I just thought it was, you know, so interesting that what I've been talking about on the show for the last year, and then I get crossed with my best friend from when I was a little kid, like, it's a great opportunity to try and help somebody who's probably been, you know, who's been through this kind of stuff, because there's stories of people with these serious back issues that have been totally cured, and you're a great story. So
yeah, but it's a fine line, isn't it? I mean, you run into somebody you haven't seen and they start telling you your back, and you have to really tread a tight rope and even bringing the stuff up, in my experience.
Yeah, there was a chat, like for anybody that's listening to this that works in an office, you've probably heard of Slack, but it's essentially like an instant messenger for offices. But there was a thread that was going on yesterday between a bunch of people that work in my office, and somebody had said, hey, can anybody recommend, I've been having upper back pain for a long, long time. Can anybody recommend somebody to help? And I got tagged by my vice president a little while later. He said, somebody needs your help, because he knows what I do. He knows like what my hobby is and talking about this stuff. And I went back and I started looking at all the messages that people are talking about, like cupping and what else? Acupuncture and chiropractor and physical therapy and all this. And someone started saying that you need to go to physical therapy and get stronger in certain places that your upper back doesn't work. And I'm thinking, like, this person that was talking, like, was a CrossFit athlete. She works out regularly. Like, why would she suddenly start having these upper back issues? And she messages me. She asked me, hey, like, what do you know about this kind of stuff? What kind of help can you give me? And I told her, maybe I came in too hot, but I just said, I was like, hey, there's basically different types of stimulus. There's an external stimulus, which would be more like you get in a car accident, some kind of trauma, like that you could really, you know, distinctively point to that. And even that could, you know, is likely going to heal after a certain amount of time. Also, like, internal stimulus, which could be more emotional factors, you know, subconscious issues, emotional problems, things like that. I'm like, if this has been around long enough, it probably falls more in the intrinsic category. And I actually do a whole podcast on this, gave her the link, and I never heard from her again. So,
yeah.
And that's, yeah, you know, that's it. So now I'm just the crazy guy, I think, that works at this tech company that keeps talking about this mind body stuff. Like, you know, I'm the nutcase on the side of the, you know, that works remotely, that just sort of pipes in every once in a while and talks about it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, whatever.
Sounds familiar.
Well, you know, we're coming up to the end here. Are there any like departing words or anything? You know, we've blasted through a lot of this stuff and kind of talked about some of your healing and such. I guess now that you're 5 years removed from really sort of having your aha open moment, you know, reflecting back, like, what kind of things can you maybe add to some of the stuff that we've talked about?
Well, I think there's just no substitution for anybody that's listening or reading about this. Is A, there's no magic bullet. Like, things did happen fast for me, but at the same time, I also read 5 books pretty fast. So there's no substitution for you doing the work and going out there and reading the information and finding out everything, you know, reading, listening to the podcasts, going through, reading the reviews, doing everything you can. There's just no easy way around it, and there's no one else that can fix you. I wish there were TMS practitioners that knew all about this, so that you could just go to a doctor and they would go, yes, you definitively have TMS, but if you're waiting for that, you're going to be waiting for a long time. You've got to do this yourself. And that would be my primary message to people. The other thing I'd like to say is just about to you personally. I've had a chance to listen to a few of these podcasts now, and you're doing a great job. These are really helpful, very professional, and keep up the good work. That's all I can say.
Thanks, man. Which 5, because healing back pain, what are the other 4 that you read very fast?
Well, I think I've read all the Sarno books. So there's the Mind-Body Prescription, the
Divided Mind.
The Divided Mind.
healing back pain, and then there's mind over back pain. So there's four from him.
Right. And I believe I have, and if for the most part, read all of those. But I think I've also read Steve Ozanek's book, and I've read parts of several other books. So I was a machine of devouring this stuff for probably 6 months. Anything I could get my hands on, I was reading and trying to digest and add it to my repertoire, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jeremy, man, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story. I know this was a heavily requested story. There's been a few people that so I think I've even posted in this TMS group that were referencing that, hey, this is like a dream guy of mine. And then finally you answered the bell last week. So I'm happy that we were able to get it on the books.
Well, there you go. You've had doctors and authors, and now you've had a guy that lives in a travel trailer. So
you know what? But of all those people that have been on it, like, people like hearing from people like you probably more than anybody, because, you know, you've sort of been to the worst of it. Like, you had your, you know, I had to stop weightlifting entirely. I was told, like, you need to put the stuff down and you need to focus on strengthening your core and, you know, doing this kind of stuff. And you were essentially told the same thing, but about golf. So, you know, we're two guys that essentially got our lives back thanks to Dr. Sarno and some of these other people.
Right on. It's great to meet like-minded people that are going to help get the truth out.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.